What up? What up, everybody? It's Double G for the Fight Game podcast. John LaRocca, how has your May the 4th been today?
I was just telling you off air, it's been pretty chaotic since I got home from work as we're getting ready for a little vacation to visit the family, my parents. So it's just been washing, decided to go out, and unexpected visitors late in the evening that, you know, that kind of stuff, kind of put everything behind. And so the people listening out there, you can hear some little clanging, some banging. It's my wife getting some stuff done here. You know, our rooms are all full. I don't have my own personal office, so I do my stuff in the kitchen, as probably people can see on the video. But, you know, so if you hear Mrs. LaRocca out there, my apologies. So.
As long as there's no F-bombs coming, because
she wouldn't do that.
She's dropping something or something.
Yeah, you know, she's Italian like myself and like my mom and my dad. So I can might be some frustrating slamming of a door or something.
Well, you guys are going on a trip, so hopefully you guys will have some fun. All right, so what are we going to do tonight? We're going to do our normal thumbs up, thumbs down with AEW Dynamite, our big picture segment on Dynamite as it's building to Double or Nothing. But I wanted to open with some Cody versus Brock conversation, because I don't know how closely you've been following Raw, but for some reason, and I don't even know if this is a great build of this match or not, it's just kind of, it just seems like, you know, they're kind of painting by the numbers and it's been fine. But all of a sudden, I think it hit me on Monday. I was like, wow, this kind of feels like a big match. And it should be a big match, right? Like, have these guys ever wrestled before? Do you know?
Unless it was during the Stardust era and all that. And then before, you know, maybe.
There are stakes in this match, which are kind of interesting, because there's no world title match, no Roman Reigns on this Backlash show. But for whatever reason, this Cody versus Brock match feels like, for the winner and the loser, there are stakes. And I kind of dig when you feel that way about matches. So I'm very much looking forward to this match. Mm-hmm. I'm also fully expecting interference. I'm expecting possibly the Bloodline getting involved. I'm expecting chair shots and tables and chaos.
Oh yeah.
And you know, probably not the cleanest finish, but I was kind of interested in what you thought the booking may be, or if you were in charge of the booking here, who would you have win and how would you do it? And what would you be leading up to? And knowing that they have this third title, I know people keep saying it's only the second title, but until Roman puts those two belts together into one, I'm going to call it the third title.
So he goes to the old blacksmith and starts molding to one title. I mentioned this last week, what I thought the book. I don't think Bloodline would interfere. I think of the Bloodline, it would be Paul Heyman popping out,
because he's got the history with Brock.
And I do think there's going to be an issue with Roman and Brock, with Heyman hanging around with Brock and all that kind of stuff. But I feel it's going to happen. It feels big, I think, for a lot of people, because of what happened at WrestleMania with Cody and Roman. Of course, Cody didn't win. So I think a lot of people expecting, like, oh, Cody needs to win this match. I say no. I say he shouldn't win this match. I think Brock should go over. I still think Cody should be pretty injured after this match. And because I don't want to see Cody in that tournament coming out, you know, for that title, for that, whatever that.
So this match with Brock puts him out of commission so much so that he cannot compete in that tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if the Prince wants the guy with the American tattoo on his neck going down the winning the belt. You know, I just think I because I don't want to see Cody win the consolation prize, you know? Yeah. Not yet. I think if you do it right, he wins it at SummerSlam from Brock Lesnar. You know, I think that would be good, but not now. Not like, okay, he lost at WrestleMania and we're giving the belt here. So I would have Brock win, some kind of shenanigans, post-match injury, you know, maybe more, maybe a lot more brutal than what happened after the Raw, after Mania, and have Cody out for, you know, at least past the tournament, maybe a few weeks past that. So
now, does he screw him some way, or is this clean? How do you beat Cody?
I think you, it's a low blow, leads to the F5. You know, Brock already established the low blow in an elimination chamber with Bobby Lashley. He's not afraid to throw the low blow. I can see somewhere where Heyman comes out, maybe tries to interfere. The referee's distracted. Brock goes for the, hits the low blow as the ref turns around. He's already picking him up for the F5, you know. And then boom, one, two, three. And then he just lays out Cody afterwards. And, you know, Heyman's happy and everything. But then, you know, SmackDown, Roman appears and he has questions. What are you hanging out with that guy for? You know?
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. But in my vision, it's Roman dealing with Jay and Jimmy and just being like, it's just thinking, and he's just like trying to figure out what he's going to do with the twins, mm-hmm. and Solo, and Heyman comes up to him and he's like, hey, you know, we got this situation with Brock, and Roman just like staring. It's like, no, you handle it. You handle it. And so it gives Heyman kind of the in, mm-hmm. you know, to not go against Roman. And he's already got Roman's permission to be dealing with Brock. And then, like you said, that's when, you know, he's in between the two of them. I don't want to see them like break up immediately. Like, I would like to see them, you know, be somewhat attached, because it's kind of, you got eyes on Raw, Brock, you got eyes, and maybe Paul, right? Maybe Paul's on both shows. Brock, you and Paul got eyes on Cody. I'm handling Bloodline business on this end on SmackDown, mm-hmm. and we got it covered.
You brought up something interesting. Roman dealing with the Usos and also Solo. I kind of like how Roman favors Solo a bit, right? And it'd be nice to, you know, they could kind of make Heyman, he get mad at Heyman a bit and be like, and Heyman be like, well, Solo didn't really do what I told him to do. And he's like, well, what, you know, that was your plan that messed up. Yeah, he's falling. Yeah, yeah. You're right. You know, again, yeah. I got to protect Solo a bit. It's interesting to me, but I do feel like they need to do something to kind of spice things up a little bit. So hopefully post Backlash when it comes to Roman, because Roman's probably not going to show up until after Backlash, right? Because I know Cody's going to be on SmackDown. They've already advertised that for, well, when you guys listen to this, it's going to be tonight, Friday night. So we'll see how that plays out.
Now, Cody did say in his Raw promo that the reason why he can't lose this match is because he does not want to start from the bottom again. He can't start from the bottom. I'm assuming that line was very strategic in whatever they're going to do, because if he loses, then maybe he's got to go through Seth again. You know, he's the one thing that's been very interesting, and sometimes this works and sometimes this doesn't. This dude wrestles a lot on TV, mm-hmm. and the crowd loves it. I thought it would make him a little less special, but has that not been the case? He's just as over as ever. So much so that I agree with you in that I think he should lose this match, because my worry coming out of WrestleMania is that the crowd would get tired of him. That's what happened in AEW. They are not tired of this dude. This dude comes out to crazy crowd response. Yeah. Everything he does is meaningful. He's booked very smartly. His promos are really smart. And I think you can beat him. If the crowd was kind of turning on him, then I think, okay, maybe you can't. But I think you totally can.
Yeah.
And then wherever the bottom is, then that's sort of going back to the beginning. And then he's going to climb. And he's not going to lose matches. He's going to win matches. And he's going to, you know, go through, you know, just about everyone to get at Roman, you know, that next time. So that's what I'm interested in watching.
And for that Puerto Rico crowd, I like putting this match on the middle with that finish of Brock, you know, low blow, cheating to win, beat Cody, let Cody Lane, a big treasure job, all that. And I do like ending the night happy for those fans when Bad Bunny beats Damian Priest. you know, in the main event. Because to that crowd, that's probably the biggest match. That's, he's like the, he's huge, right? Like mm-hmm. Bad Bunny's huge. I mean, I haven't heard one damn song he's ever seen in my life. But
I've heard
recognize
some.
He's huge. I recognize he's a huge, you know, star. I'm just an old man at this point.
You know who's a big Bad Bunny fan is our guy, Damien, the Dames.
What's up, Dames?
He's a giant Bad Bunny fan. He and his wife.
Dude, I just discovered a group called Blackpink. I never heard of them before in my life.
With Bret Hart?
No, they're like a Korean K-pop band. I have a young coworker. She's 23 years old. She keeps me like, you know, hip, you know, with all the latest, which emojis I should use, shit like that. So she was telling me about Blackpink. Her boyfriend likes Blackpink. And then she showed me the video, these like very attractive, cute little K-pop girls dancing. I'm like, I'm sure I know why he likes. I don't know what's the musical talent that these girls have here.
All right, so what are you going to do Saturday? I mean, you're not watching UFC much anymore, but for the mixed, the full combat sports fan, you have Backlash.
Wow.
I think there's a New Japan show as well.
I got to go back and watch the New Japan show. Just haven't wanted to watch Cobb and Saber Jr.
I know, me too.
I got to hit up Finestone and see what he thought about it. And I'll watch it. Because I'll be at my parents' house and there'll be some downtime late at night, and I think I could try to throw it on and stream it on the screen.
On the world, yeah. And then there's the UFC 288. Henry Cejudo is back. And
yeah,
then there's Canelo fighting a guy who's, you know, not really a top guy. Mm. So much stuff, and I got to find out how to watch this Backlash show and not get spoiled because...
Warriors, baby.
Warriors-Lakers.
Yeah.
Game 3. At Crypto Arena, and the Warriors came back tonight to blew the Lakers out tonight, so it's 1-1, and
you'd be proud of me. I met one of the kids on Hunter's baseball team, one of the dads. We've been kind of become buddies, and he's like, meet me for a drink. So I met him for a drink, and the Warriors game was on, but it's game 5. And
oh, the Kings game.
Yeah, surrounded by not game 5. It was, game 6. Surrounded by Warriors fans.
That was the one they lost.
And they're just pissed. You know what? And I'm not, you know me. I support them. I've really been into basketball in a very long time. And I was like, guys, I was telling everyone around me, it's the Warriors. They're just waiting for a dramatic game 7 win. And I called
That's
it.
What happened. It's exactly what happened. All right, let's head into our thumbs up, thumbs down segment where we look at whatever's going on in pro wrestling current that we think is something's good and some might not be too great.
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
All right, did you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first. I'm going to get a thumbs up to Tony Khan for Wembley Stadium. 50,000 tickets sold so far. Great for them. Great for AEW. I saw the Twitter peep saying like, hey, we were on it. But we were pretty positive though, I thought. You know, I think, you know, to me with AEW, it's like, I know, like, I got a few phone calls like, what do you think they're going to do? And I'm like, you know what? With AEW, it's like, first show to market, I won't be surprised that they do very well. You know, they do. That's what they do. This is what AEW does. You know, people really want to rally behind them and check it, you know, and support, and especially when it comes to first time stuff. So not surprised at all. I think it's great for them. It's awesome. It's going to be fun seeing a big stadium full of fans and the AEW. I hope they have some good build to that show though. I think we will with CM Punk coming back by then. So.
Did you see the drama that went on? Because now I don't know how to word this exactly, but
some guy on Twitter said something stupid, and people I saw
so,
that. I
think so I it was it was sort of all out, kind of, you know, let's try and make this thing not as big as it is from. Mm-hmm. A few people on the WWE side. And so Mike Coppinger, who's a boxing writer who I follow, and he writes things that I read. I don't know him personally. So he responds to the Wrestling Observer and Dave Meltzer on Twitter and says, oh, I heard that the building was only scaled for 40,000. Oh, you know, just last year I saw Tyson Fury at Wembley and it was 94,000 and I was in the front row. So when he tweeted that, I kind of started laughing because, you know, boxing has been a dinosaur for many years now. We just had a fantastic boxing event with Gervonta Davis beating Ryan Garcia, but those are few and far between these days. And so you see boxing folks kind of get on there.
My coworker watched it. He told me it was fake. And then I explained to him about liver shots and how they work. Yeah. But
so I just thought, oh, you know, boxing, you know, trying to steal a little bit of thunder. And I thought Coppinger was kind of joking. So I liked the tweet.
Oh,
by the way, liking tweets is all of a sudden bad now. That is officially bad on Twitter. Like, you can't like something because then you can't explain why you liked it. And people start creating all of these stories about why you like the thing and such. So so I heard that. Yeah, I was, you know, I was anti AEW for liking this tweet. And that just made me want to keep the heart there. Like, it just made me not want to take it off. But that was the reason. I thought it was Coppinger trying to be funny about boxing drawing, you know, because I'm a big boxing fan too. So then I hear later that this was a little bit of a strategy, and you know, there were folks trying to get tweets like that out there to poo-poo this AEW great feat. And my immediate thought was, why would you do that? Because the second day of these ticket sales, they're going to blow through the 40,000 and you're going to look stupid. And then on day three, they blow through 50,000 and you look even stupider. So anybody who took that bait and posted tweets like that, shame on you. You should have figured that out.
I mean, you know, good for them. Like, if, I don't know why people can't just be positive, you know. It's so funny because I didn't know about the like tweet, and I didn't know about, because I did see some people attack you, and I think our good friend Mike Gilbert was like, hey, La Rock was the one that always bagging on AEW. Why you get on Garrett? And I started laughing, like, yeah, why are they attacking Garrett for?
But yeah, I had a back and forth with someone on Twitter, but you know, if it's genuine feedback, I like Twitter for that, for those reasons. But if it's bad faith Twitter, those are the people I just block and I don't deal with.
It's cool, right? It's cool. I'm glad. You know, do we really want to see 10,000 in a Spiegel Stadium? No. I mean, it's good for AEW. You know, just relax, people.
The business news for AEW has been so fantastic, and this is going to relate to my thumbs up here. It kind of reminds me of WWE right before the pandemic, when their business was doing so great and the product was not as good. And with AEW, it was always the product was solid and maybe the business was a little bit behind. But now the business is like, especially if they re-up with Warner Brothers Discovery and they get a nice increase, like the business aspect of AEW could be very strong. And now I feel like some of these shows that I've been watching of late, like, haven't been as exciting. And so the business might be a little bit ahead of the creative right now, which leads into my thumbs up, which is Will Washington, podcaster, overall good dude. He joins All Elite in creative. I originally heard, you know, specifically like someone to help with continuity, in addition to like multiple other things that he's going to help out with. And, you know, I don't think everybody knows who Will is, but those of you who listen to this show, you're somewhat in the wrestling podcast ecosystem, and you would have heard Will's Grap City podcast with Phil and Righteous Reg. And that podcast was, you know, I don't know if groundbreaking is the right word, but you know, when it comes to wrestling podcasts and this ecosystem, again, it's really white male dominated, just like the wrestling business is white male dominated. And now that, which is why I really liked Grapsity. Myself, I am a person of color as well. And so I feel like me doing this show on this website is representative for, you know, people who look like me. But I can't overstate how fantastic this hire is. Now, it's not because I know of Will's credentials as a wrestling mind. Like, he's been doing stuff like this for 20 years on the podcast and since he was like a teenager. He is somebody who I know that Tony Khan trusts him. I know that they had a strong relationship. But also, he is a little bit on the younger end, right? Like, he's younger than both of us by, gosh, he's probably younger than me by like 11 or 12 years. And that is meaningful as well. Not only do you have a person of color helping, but he's also somebody who's relating to the talent because he is closer to their age. He some may know this, may not know, but I had Will on this show talking about the album that they put together for AEW with the soundtracks with the hip hop stuff. And Will was a part of that. I forgot how many songs that he had on that. So you're talking about a guy who relates to younger people, and he's related to Swerve, like they're cousins, I believe. Mm. So he's close to the business. He's smart about things. He knows what he's talking about. And I'm so hopeful that this pays off for Tony Khan, you know, 10x, because. And this is not only wrestling. This is every single kind of company. You know, Jeff Jarrett. I'm only using Jeff Jarrett because it's the thing that popped into my head. And Dave and I got to talk to Jeff about this, which is when Tony hired Jeff Jarrett, I don't think a single person was surprised, because the wrestling industry recycles people in wrestling. If you worked for WWE, you have a fantastic chance of working for AEW if there is a position that is yours, right? Like, having the know-how of what WWE does is beneficial to AEW. This is outside of that, because Will didn't work for WWE. Will didn't work for a company in wrestling. He didn't work for Impact. He is more like you and I from the perspective of what we do, how we watch wrestling. And he's being given a shot to grow into a position. And if he does well, he's going to have connections of people more like him, which is going to be great for that company. And you're not, and there's nothing wrong with recycling old wrestling people for positions. Like, they have experience for a reason, and all of that stuff is good. But to take a chance on somebody who may not fit that, I really commend Tony for doing it. And I hope, I'm crossing my fingers that Will just kills it. He hits it out of the park, because, you know, he's going to have contacts and people who kind of do what he does, right, and thinks like he does. And I think that's going to be beneficial to the wrestling business, because then you can expand outward with talent, and you don't only have to bring in the same people over and over and over and over. So I'm rooting for Will. I think Will's a really good dude. I've been a fan of his for a little while. I've interviewed him at least two or three different times. So big shout outs to Will Washington. He is my thumbs up for this week.
What's his, I thought it was mostly digital. I saw on the description of his job title. Is he helping with the digital marketing, and is he doing booking, like that kind of stuff? He's helping with creative, or
the piece of creative that I heard. Now, this did not come from his mouth, so It may be not wrong, but I was told, or I'd heard, that it had something involving helping with continuity and making sure that, you know, if we see Sammy Guevara and Tay on Dynamite 1 week and they're starting something, that it's you know, it's made sure that they're going to finish, you know, that, or they're going to go to the next thing, and they're not just going to be forgotten for 3 weeks. And then people are going to go, what's going on with that? That's what I was told, but that is not coming from Will's mouth, because I have not talked to him about that. So,
well, yeah, Tony needs someone to kind of like look outside what he's doing and kind of point out like, hey, you never really clear this up, or this is, you know, where is Swerve, by the way? You know, like, this is the last time we saw him. And he hit Keith Lee with the boombox, and we haven't seen him since. So, yeah, that kind of stuff would be good. So, yeah, that's good. Booking-wise, I mean, it is different, though. I don't know how it is now with a lot of these guys, but, you know, talking to wrestlers is a whole art in itself. You know, communicating with wrestlers what you want them to do is, like, Tony signs a paycheck, so they have to listen to him, right? But when there's someone that's not – never booked, never, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to get them to, I mean, it's how it used to be, but I don't know how it is now.
I mean, well, guess who's never booked, and I'm sure this is part of why Will's getting this chance. Tony Khan, right?
No, I'm saying, but he's also the guy with the money. That's it.
No, but that, yeah. But that's why I'm saying he may be open to this, because he doesn't come from this old guard, right? Mm-hmm. He created his own company and he created his own process, so he may be way more open to someone from the outside helping with a different perspective than, like, you know, your old boys network of WWE. But so that's why I think it's positive. And
yeah, I hope it's nothing but success, and whatever's going to help make the show better, you know, I'm with it, especially after the show I saw this past Wednesday. I know you liked it more than I did, but I wasn't
I think, I mean, I generally like the show more than you do, but it's also the way that we do this show now, where we're not dissecting every single little segment. I just like it better, because I'm not just picking and picking and picking and picking.
You'll be surprised what my favorite thing on the show was.
Okay. Oh, no, I'm really interested. Yeah, okay. Next thing, your thumbs down.
My thumbs down is we're still stick with AEW here. I'm not a fan of this. I was not a fan of this Britt Baker shirt thing. I know you have a lot to say about it, but I just don't understand why they went that route with it. I really didn't really care until, who was it? I think it was maybe Brian Last that actually said it on the podcast with Jim Cornette, which made a really good sense and hit me. I didn't even think about this, but, like, if you're a fan and you're wearing that and you wear it to, like, out, like, because no one knows who Britt Baker is, like, you know, for the most part, like, she's not a huge superstar, you know what I mean? It's not like it was, you know, shit. I don't think many people even recognize many wrestlers these days, but, like, it's not like if it was, you know, in the 90s and Sable, you know what I mean? People know who Sable is, right? But no one really knows who Britt Baker is, and they'd be like, why are you wearing a shirt with the girl with the black eye, you know, like. But at the same time, I think a lot of people's anger about this has also made ticket sales go up. You know, people are just buying it, putting it somewhere in a closet, you know, and I don't know if they're going to wear it out.
Yeah, whatever the strategy here was to create bad vibes or you know, just down talk the shirt, it just worked in the reverse, and they knew that was going to happen, right?
It always works that way, I guess.
So, you know? I have a hard time with wrestling shirts these days, because I wear a Stone Cold Steve Austin shirt if I'm going to an event, just because I like it. It's the way that his character's drawn. I have a Cody American Nightmare Bullet Club shirt that I like, and that's really it for me. So I'm not really in the market for wrestling shirts. So I wouldn't wear this, not because Britt has a black eye, but I'm not wearing too many wrestling shirts these days.
Yeah.
When I first saw the shirt, I thought, oh, these heels, the outcasts, are wearing this shirt to antagonize the babyface in a moment that we saw on TV was supposed to be a really terrible moment for her when she gets hit with these kendo sticks. I'm still unsure how she got the black eye based off of that angle.
Must have gotten in a match, I'm guessing.
And they're also building Jericho and Adam Cole. And that was also at, you know, supposed to be in the storyline, one of Adam Cole's worst days ever, and it plays out on Dynamite on Wednesday. So the story of this shirt, the heels antagonizing the baby faces, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool the way that they're doing that. And I thought, okay, well, here's what's gonna happen. Britt, as the baby face, is going to see that shirt and go, oh, I'm going to reverse this. I'm going to promote this shirt and the fans are going to be into it. And that's kind of what happened. Now, the problem, I think, with the conversation was people going like, oh, people are going to think this shirt shows domestic abuse or whatever. It's not really what people think because it's not what happened. You remember when Chris Jericho accidentally punched Shawn Michaels' wife in the face in that angle in like the late 2000s? It was on SummerSlam. Like, he was supposed to hit Shawn and Shawn. Yeah, it was supposed to be an accident.
Oh, you mean like a storyline? Really, storyline.
No, he story really line. Punched yeah, yeah, yeah. her in the face. Like, he really did. So she oh, like, really got a black. Bit? Yeah, she really got a black eye from it. And if then Chris Jericho put that shirt on because he punched Shawn's wife in the face, then I could see that the problem with that, because it's promoting man on woman violence. That's not what this shirt was doing. So the people who go, oh yeah, but if you wear it and nobody knows, well, it's not for them. Like, it's not for them to wear. No, you can wear, if you wear that shirt to a bar and somebody goes, oh, who's the girl with the black eye, then you explain the shirt to the person and they go, oh, I get it. I it's a wrestling thing. So that's why I think the A to B conversation that is happening, like, oh, well, people are going to immediately think this. Those people need to, like, as Righteous Red says, go touch grass. Like, that you can, you know, not everything is so simplistic here. So anyway, that is my conversation now. But I understand why people who don't like that shirt. It's not for everybody, but I'm almost empowered. I almost like the empowering of that shirt as it is. Okay, so let's go with my thumbs down. This one's tough for me because as much as I love the MJF character and his work, I'm not sure if this thing is working. And I'm just I don't want to say that this run is a failure, because we you know, it's still going. They're still building it up. But I saw that rating for Dynamite, and yes, it's tough competition, right? That's a hard show to build when you've got the NBA and you've got NHL, and Vanderpump Rules is on a heater, man. Vanderpump Rules is killing it right now. So, you know, more than likely they're not going to do a great rating. And that 0.28 in the demo, same demo as last week. So I get it. It's a tough week. But the problem is, my problem with this is, MJF doesn't wrestle on TV, almost never. He does a lot of talking. He does a lot of segments. But when he wrestles, it is meant to be really important. So he should have, just by the mere fact that he wrestled on that show, that should have stunted some of what was going to be, you know, obvious. Low rating there for him. So my thumbs down is just MJF. You save him. You don't have him wrestle almost ever. And he comes in and you promote that he's wrestling. You promote it for a week. And we don't have the quarters, but maybe I'm hoping that his quarter actually improved from the quarter right before it. But I think when you got your champ and you got your champ wrestling on TV, that should mean a little bit more for ratings than it did on Wednesday. So MJF is my thumbs down.
It's MJF's your thumbs down because of the ratings. All right. That you're just,
yeah.
You're blaming
yeah.
him for the ratings.
No, I just think, no, I mean, like, you know, so, okay. So, you know, if Austin was going to wrestle a match on TV, right, the ratings were going to go up because he didn't really wrestle much on TV. And if MJF is your champ, he should mean something to the ratings if he's going to actually step in the ring, especially if you've held him off and mm-hmm. he only does promos. And how many times has he wrestled this year? He wrestled Ricky Starks. He wrestled Bryan Danielson. And mm-hmm. who else? And then he wrestled Takeshita, I think. So maybe four matches all year long. And he's in the main event of this show. It's the main event storyline of the pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. And I just think he should have brought that rating up just a little bit. But maybe the quarters will tell a different story. I haven't seen the quarters yet. So it's quite possible that it just tanked up until his match and he brought it back up. But we'll see. But I just think overall, mm-hmm. you know, if your champ is wrestling on TV, it should mean a little bit more than it meant to AEW Dynamite.
And I'll take MJF's side of this is that the booking post pay-per-view for MJF hasn't been strong at all. This whole four pillar storyline has been very weak and confusing, and people thrust in a position that they shouldn't probably be in at this point in time. I think this is like probably the weakest build to a world title match, I think, in AEW's history, right?
Yep.
I'm trying to think of it others, but I can't think of anything right now.
I mean, it's possible there was some stuff during the pandemic that we just forgot. But yeah, for big pay-per-views, like, this is not great.
Yeah. It's really bad stuff. And I don't think people are into it. I think if MJF was, if they did just him and Darby and there was a classic build of the, you know, the punk kid that's, you know, versus the rich kid, you know, that kind of just people can really get behind, I think it would work. But you throw Jungle Boy in who hasn't really come off well, or Sammy who hasn't come off well, and this confusing story between Sammy and MJF and the, you know, are they going to do it four way? And they're not. Well, they're still going to do it. It's been a mess. I think if MJF was with anyone else, people that people care about, it'd be fine. But I think right now they just don't care about this four way. Whatever that match is going to be at the pay per view, it's probably going to be the last match. But I think there'll be other matches. I think the Blackpool Combat Club versus the Elite will probably be the most important match on that show for a lot of fans. That would be the real main event.
Yep. I agree with you. All right, let's go to the big picture here, and we'll talk more about this world title build here. So,
the big picture.
So the big picture for AEW Dynamite on Wednesday. I want to start with what we were just talking about with MJF, which is this title picture. They kind of booked this four-way a little bit backwards to me, because we should have been wanting these babyfaces to win this match so badly so we get this four-way. But instead, you know, a lot of the fan base going like, kind of want to see a one-on-one, and I kind of want it to be Darby. So it didn't work, what they tried to do. But this was probably the best of all of the weeks as far as explaining motivation for each wrestler. And we'll go through all the segments that had to do with these four guys. So the first segment was a Jack Perry and Darby Allin segment with the both of them. And they were trying to do the whole thing of like, you know what? You know, we've had our differences, but you know, it's in our best interest to win this match and to get to the four-way. So we have to be partners in, you know, that whole thing. So immediately, as you know, both teams are going to have partners who don't really get along perfectly well. And that is kind of the story of the main event for tonight. And then you had Sammy and Max kind of start out in a way where Sammy's like, bro, you know, you could have given me a lift in the limo. I watched the television show. So the one thing that I understand now is some people watch the television show of the talent and some people don't. Because yeah, this yeah. is a great explanation, but all it made me do is go, what about the million other times when something happened on TV and the talent did not know? So that just means they don't watch the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then they made up really quickly and they were kissing each other's foreheads again. And they're ready to go, the heels against the baby faces in this tag team match. Later, actually, it was right before the segment, right before the main event. Jungle Boy and Darby were again kind of trying to pump each other up, get ready to go to the ring. Darby leaves and MJF comes in and he tries to talk Jack Perry into losing on purpose because, you know, if you lose, I'll make you a made guy. But then there was one fault in his plan, I thought. He said that Jack wasn't world championship material anyway. So this backfired for Max by saying that he couldn't win the big one. And then Darby came in and he saw the two of them and he got really suspicious about his partner. What is Jack going to do? And you know what I was hoping was going to happen? I was hoping Darby was just not going to tag out, like, because he's so suspicious that he's like, can't turn his back. Like, he's got to face like all three guys and he's like, but, and then, you know, Jack sort of wins him over by being a good baby face. And then they tag, but that's not really what happened. So what did you think about the storytelling of where they were getting before the main event?
I think I was just frustrated the weeks before leading up to this. And now we're got this, the same old, you know, partners not agreeing with each other or that kind of deal. I don't know. I wasn't feeling this leading up to it and it didn't really make me care for the main event. Again, as I explained earlier, it's just as a waste of MJF's talent. You know, it should be him and Darby at least. And I think that's really hurting him right now, this storyline. And I assume that's why, you know, I know there's a strong competition with NBA and NHL playoffs and all that. But like, when a product's hot, people will tune in. I think this is one they're like, you know, the main focus was this world title picture storyline, and it's the fans least interested, in my opinion. And if it was more maybe Elite versus Blackpool Combat Club, you know, forward on this episode, I think it would have been probably a better rating, but at least a stronger rating compared to the competition. But I think this is such a weak storyline. It's just people have no interest in it.
I mean, you know, that is exactly the story as of right now, was, you know, what they were trying to do, what they were trying to tell just wasn't working. And so it was pretty easy to me for this to be the best, of the weeks so far. You know, the first week, If we just looked at it from the Darby perspective, he was actually pretty good that week.
Yeah.
But that was really it. And then that's why I'm saying, you know, they kind of told this story backwards, in that you want the fans to be wanting this four-way instead of wanting the one-on-one. You know, this is so both baby faces kind of get the match, and, you know, Max can't screw everybody. But it was just, you know, and part of it is also Max is just more popular than all of these other guys. Mm-hmm. And so the fans don't really care. You know, it's not that big of a deal to them who he beats. They just want to see him and they want to see him win this match. So that is the other part of this. Okay, so then we get to the match. And, you know, the baby faces are eyeballing each other. You know, Jack's trying to tag in and Darby's not really giving him the time of day. And on the other side, it's MJF and Sammy, they're blind tagging in so that they can take the glory, and then they're eyeballing each other for doing that. Mm-hmm. And then in the end, I thought the finish was pretty creative, in that Darby was a man on a mission. He didn't want Jack screwing this up for him. So Jack has Sammy pinned, but Darby's like, nope, I'm going for the coffin drop, brother. And if you're there, you're getting hit with it too. And Jack had to move out of the way at the last minute. Darby hits the coffin drop on Sammy. He wins it for the baby faces. So now the match is a four-way. What did you think about them beating Sammy rather than beating MJF?
Well, you don't want MJF being beat by any of these guys right now. Just, it's not worth sacrificing MJF losing just to kind of add some spice to this match. I think this match is just, it's just going to happen. I didn't like the idea that Darby's like, well, screw you. Because what if he hits Jungle Boy? if he's not the legal man, how can he pin? Because Jungle Boy got the win, right? Over Sammy.
No, he moved out of the way and Darby pinned him.
Yeah, I was kind of confused. I thought Jungle Boy was legal in the match. But then again, like, rules don't really apply to this promotion. Like, you just, like, even during the match, like, there's a moment where Sammy had a chin lock on Darby and Jungle Boy was supposed to come in, draw the ref, and that didn't happen, but that was the idea. That was the planned spot they had. And then as the referees with Jungle Boy, Sammy was going to get the scarf that MJF had and choke Darby. But what happened was this isn't going to go according to plan because the referee, Bryce Rensburg, decides to just turn around because that's where he expects Jungle Boy to be in the ring trying to get in. He's supposed to push him back. But Jungle Boy never went in the ring. So there was no reason for Bryce to turn around at that point because Jungle Boy's not in the ring. And so it just looked awkward as hell when the referee just turns around and goes to the corner. And then Jungle Boy tries to get in the ring. And then Sammy has a scarf and he's choking Darby. But then it would happen. But since it Jungle Boy and Bryce both messed up, they quickly did it and Bryce turned around and then he clearly sees Sammy choking Darby with the scarf and he quickly throws it away to MJF and the whole crowd just groans, right? So this match was a whole lot of mess. I was kind of confused who was legal and I was wondering like, why is he going to take him out? You know, and I know Excalibur tried to explain it, but you know, he was kind of suspect all night explaining Sting. We'll get back to the Battle Royal later, I'm sure. But
do you really want to talk about that Battle Royal?
No, it was horrible. But two things that we'll get into it, but let's finish this. Like, it's just, I said, this didn't add anything to it. You know what I mean? I think people are like, okay, now we're going to get the four-way anyways. Like, you should have just had the four-way if you really wanted to do the four-way and build some interest with that. But I think the way Tony Khan went was the right way. And maybe it's because that booking sheet. Did you see that clip of, you watch All Access? I don't watch All Access, but.
No, I stopped watching it after the first episode.
Me too, because it's horrible. But there's a clip of Sammy talking to Tony Khan, and Tony Khan has his booking sheet. And it's this big, long white paper with lines. And he's like, here, I got some good matches for you here. I got some good matches for you here. Like, who talk? I mean, I never booked like that in my life. And the paper looked blank, most of it. You know, like, it's like, what's going on here?
Maybe it was a work.
Maybe it was a work, but God, man, it was hilarious. And I was like, well, this is what I expected. This is why the show's so chaotic. And hopefully Will Washington can kind of come in there and, you know, like you said, help the continuity there. But I was dying laughing. But no, this match, this main event, I mean, it gave me, I couldn't really follow it. And I'm just not interested. I wasn't interested in any. Like, my favorite thing on the show. Should I go into it right now?
Your favorite thing?
What do you think my favorite thing on the show was?
Now that you kind of teased it being something that I wouldn't think that you liked, the Sheeta turn.
No, that was stupid too. I liked Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal going to Mark Briscoe's house. I just found it a very entertaining segment with Briscoe coming out with his son, his kid, and Jarrett going, oh, she's a cute girl or something. And he goes, that's a boy. And just the silliness of it. It was just a fun segment. And I got a kick out of it. It was actually some good comedy there.
No, I thought it was fun too.
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah,
I liked it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're not gonna. I don't have the Trios Battle Royal on my rundown here. So if you wanted to mention it or whatever you wanted to mention, go for it.
Well, one, it was just rushed through. They tried to make Powerhouse Hobbs look like a monster, but he still got eliminated anyways.
And the timing was off on some of those spots, too.
Of course.
In the eliminations, they were way off.
And here's the thing, like, you put the monster in the battle royal, and he's need to win it, but he needs to look strong, right? But when you've already seen the monster for a while, and you've seen him lose, and it's not like Diesel in 94, right? In the Rumble, where he's been pretty protected since he debuted in June of 93. And then he gets in the Rumble in 94 and he's dominant. He doesn't win, but he's so dominant and it's memorable. So you try to do stuff like everyone kind of copies that formula with monsters and battle royals or big men in battle royals. And it works when you haven't beat the guy before or you've protected him. Will has been up and down, and this whole TNT title thing was a bust, and so it just did him no favors. They might thought it, it made him look good, but no. But my favorite part of this battle royal was Excalibur, just because this match was the winner of this six man battle royal, whatever. The winner gets a title shot at the titles, right?
That's in that funky match where the countouts are different and the rules are different. And confused trying to follow that thing.
But my favorite part is like Excalibur said, and he says, like, essentially, the winner of this match will get a title shot. Well, yeah, that's why we're fucking having it, bro. that's what they advertise. It's for number one contendership. And then, yes, as you mentioned, House of Black cut a promo and are calling it now House Rules, which I guess it's like Raven's Rules in WCW at the time.
Also the name of their house shows.
Yeah, and then that's right. And then but to be fair, the challenging team can pick the stipulation. Just way over booking. Who booked this? Well, no, booked it, but it's just like why? Why does it be so overbooked?
It's kind of like some of this New Japan stuff. Did you hear about this 3 out of 5 match that they had?
No, I probably would skip that one. Was it Yano and stuff?
No, it was, I think it was Shingo against, I forgot who he wrestled, but like every fall had to be different. Like one was pin, one was submission. I forgot what the other one was, but you had to win like 3 different ways to win the match.
I mean, if it's between two guys, it's a serious match. Maybe that would work, but what they used to call it, the 3 stages of hell or something like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like that, I liked, but yeah, but it's like all of a sudden, it's just like the heels are making the rules up, and I didn't even like in WCW when there's Raven's Rules. Even then, I was like, well, yeah, he can do his stupid, chair stuff and hardcore ECW style stuff, and or at least they're the PG version of it, and I just don't like that, so it's very silly, and I just feel that House of Black should be doing more. They're just kind of just on the peripheral. I think Julian Hall is more like getting more TV time than Aleister Black and Malakai Black and Murphy and
call Julia Hart Jillian Hall?
Did I say that?
Are we talking about the same
Julia Hart?
The same Jillian Hall who had that like
face
crater thing on her face. Yeah. Like,
did I say
Jillian
Hall?
Yeah, you said Jillian Hall.
Oh, whatever. Who cares? Screw them all. I don't even care about them that much.
all right. So let's talk about this Elite versus Blackpool Combat Club scenario, because they're setting up a match next
cage
week,
match.
Main event of Dynamite, Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley. There was an interview segment where Danielson was talking about Bret Hart saying the best there ever will be. And Danielson's like, how could you say that you're the best there ever will be when we're training guys to be better than us? He's like, even this little shit, Yuta, I hope he's better than me. And so Danielson's all about making the business a better place and making the wrestlers better than him. And then Moxley talked about this cage match with Omega. You know, very kind of cool heelish promo from Moxley, not dastardly heel promo from Moxley. Just mentioned that they're both going to probably bleed. And so what I wanted to ask you was, I was trying to figure out what the right emotion Kenny Omega should have had in his interview, because Kenny Omega, I think the emotion may have been exhausted because he was just like, oh my God, dude, like, you beat up Takeshita, and then, you know, you guys put the screwdriver and then Dawn, and he's just like, can we just get this over? Like, that was the feeling that he gave me, was like, can we just get this over with? I'm sick of this. And I thought, I was like, well, he probably feels he does a better interview in this, like, really thoughtful human kind of interview, which is more of his style. But I was kind of hoping for the, like, fuck you, John Moxley, Kenny Omega. But that's not what we got.
No, it was a horrible promo by Kenny Omega. It's like they interrupted his video game playing. Hey, can you do this now, please? You know, like, and he's just like, just kind of like passive. Like, yeah, you know, it's going to be fight you want, fight you get. You know, like, you want to get crazy, we'll get crazy.
Don's one line had, like, more fire than Omega's entire promo.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand why they... I would have said, hey, let's not use that one. I want some more passion. We're building to a cage match here, my friend. You know, a big grudge match. You almost got stabbed with a screwdriver, and you try to stab him with a screwdriver. Like, you know, you guys aren't going to go out and just play hacky sack. Like, you know, like, go in. You're going to a cage match. You're going to fight. Get pumped up. Sell me the tomorrow show. That cage match sounds cool. I kind of wish it was on the pay-per-view, honestly. But I guess we're probably going to get Anarchy in Arena is what I'm guessing we're going to get.
So the problem that I have with this cage match, and I know I'm not supposed to feel this way because as a fan, you shouldn't look at it in this way, but that's why we do what we do, is for the life of me, I'm trying to figure out how they set up the multi-man match, which we all sort of expect is going to happen at the pay-per-view based off of a cage match between two of the guys in it. And now we know that cage matches aren't like this anymore, not even Hell in the Cell cage matches, but they're supposed to kind of be feud enders. And I feel like we're just going to get a ton of interference and someone's going to get slipped something in the cage. And I guess Moxley's going to lose because he's the kind of the guy who can lose and be fine with losing. But like, how do you build to the next match if it's, you know, in this storytelling, like, the cage match kind of is usually the ender, and it doesn't seem like it's going to be here.
I think Moxley's winning because I think it depends what they want to do for Blood and Guts. Is maybe Blood and Guts is the pay-per-view match, you know? I don't know. I don't think the arena is set up that way, so I'm guessing it's not. I'm guessing Blood and Guts usually happens in, what, June normally? At least last year it was in June, I believe. So I'm guessing Mox wins here, the Elite win at the pay-per-view, and then there's the final match is probably the cage match, the Blood and Guts match, the War Games deal. So, and that's going to, you know, end that. So yeah, I that's why I think. I don't know how it's going to happen. I'm guessing maybe the old screwdriver gets called.
Yeah,
or maybe Hangman Page makes his return here. Maybe you're right. Maybe Kenny Omega does win. You know, maybe he foils it or something. Mm-hmm. Or maybe Hangman has to play into this somehow, right? Because he's been off TV since he got stabbed in the eye with the yell.
Yeah, he must be really, really hurt, but not hurt enough for them to tell us.
Yeah, there's been no updates on him.
Like
no update at all.
I want to see 4 weeks of Hangman with an eye patch or something, at least, if we're not going to do, like, just do something to remind us that he's still a human and he's still alive.
Just him trying to, like, play with the kid, but just trips over everything because he can't see. He's frustrated at home.
Yeah, something. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to totally be goofy, but it could be like, you know, it could be like, you know how they like doing the little, they could do like a little interview where they're shooting him and it's like the interviewer is in wherever AEW is and they're talking back to Hangman. And then it's like Renee saying, Hangman, you know, how are you doing? And he's just like so frustrated because his eye's not getting any better. And he just shows that frustration. I feel maybe, like that would be way better than just not having him on TV at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you do go to his home and you check up on him. And it's just, you know, obviously a very serious segment. And where they actually interview his wife. And she's saying she doesn't want him to come back in wrestling. You know? Like, this is what you're nearly lost your eye, and it's still, we're still not sure if you're ever going to gain full sight in it. You know what I mean? And your kid is only, what, a couple years old? Three years old? And, you know, is it worth getting seriously injured and missing out on your son's or daughter's future? And all that, and him struggling with that, right, as well. And that's why he hasn't returned, because he's, you know, trying to, you know, figure out, you know, is it family or is it his career, you know, the balance of that and something like that. And then finally, you know, that maybe Moxie starts gloating over that, you know, for a couple promos. And then when we at least expect it, here comes Hangman Page back to get some revenge. Or who was it that did it? Was it Danielson? Danielson's the one that did it, right?
Yes.
With this, so yeah, then he comes back and gets revenge on Danielson. At least that's a fresh match, Danielson and Hangman. So
okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is Jericho and Adam Cole, also involves Britt Baker. Adam Cole opened up the show. He was in an eight man with, it was he and Roderick Strong, the debuting Roderick Strong in AEW as far as his first match.
Yeah.
And Orange Cassidy and Bandido. So it was the four of them against the Jericho Appreciation Society. Jericho comes out with them. Cole wants to get to Jericho, but Jericho's buddies are kind of in the way. And Jericho's going to do the color commentary with the team. So, you know, opener match, exactly what you expect from an AEW opening match. Lots of moves, lots of, you know, just fun baby-faced moves, like Bandido, you know, holding people up for a suplex and stuff. And then the baby faces win the match. Cole hits his running knee, even though he completely missed. He missed so bad that I was like, wow, he really missed that knee really badly. And then I forget, I think Tony Schiavone's like, oh, hit it right on the money. And I was like, dude, I literally am watching it right here. He did not even hit the move. And what'd you think about Roderick at AEW?
I talked about it last week. I'm happy for him. I think it's a good spot for him. And, you know, I think his chances on the main roster have been very uncertain, you know, with his size. And he's not the strongest promo. Good wrestler, though. But I think he just would be, you know, kind of in limbo, honestly, in WWE. So I think it, for him, like I said, major neck surgery, lighter schedule, traveling with his wife, home more often with his wife and kid. I think it's a good move for him. It was entertaining to watch this matchup because Roderick getting frustrated at Bandido for Bandido tags in. And of course, every lucha guy, they love this. This happens all the time. They just like to get in the ring. Once they get in the ring, they like to start clapping their hands, look at the fans. Give me some cheers. Give me some cheers. And Roddy's like, dude, go, go, go. He's like telling him, get your ass going, because You know, there's no time for that. You know, we're not working a house show here. We're working television. I found a kick. I got a kick out of that. And even at one point, there's Roddy's getting frustrated. He goes over to the corner, yells at something to the 2.0 guys. He's calling a lot of stuff to those guys. Honestly, what I think they should have done, instead of Mud, just I know they did stuff with Orange Cassidy, Bandido last week to set this match up. I wish they never did that. I wish it would just been Adam Cole teaming up with Roddy Strong versus 2.0, right? I think they would have had a nice, really good opener. And then you have Jericho would come out, do commentary, but he also has Garcia and Hager on top of the rampway to block Cole coming. You know what I mean? Like it was so silly at the end of the match when Cole wins, he darts up the stage and we have to pretend that Jericho doesn't see him coming up there. Monitors are in his face, you know what I mean? And then I thought that was silly.
Well, so, you know, he's so into the commentary and degrading Adam Cole, and he's so into himself that Adam Cole had to beeline. And it's like, so if you're behind that, that table or the desk or whatever, it's not like Jericho could just hop up to the top of the thing. I was thinking about that too. It's like, man, how did Jericho not see it? But A, they made sure to let us know that Adam Cole hustled, knowing that he couldn't just walk up there and that Jericho could not skedaddle. And then also just the fact that Jericho's still behind the desk and Adam Cole has to, like, you know, jump through the thing to get to him. So I didn't mind that part that much. I actually like that part because finally we see some fire from a babyface who doesn't like getting his ass kicked and doesn't like his girlfriend getting her ass kicked. And he's finally like, I'm going to kill this guy. So that's the part that I liked about it.
This is what I would have done. I would have made a tag match, Roddy and Cole. This way, Roddy just debuted last week. We saw his debut. This is now his first match. Now it's a tag at least, so you can focus on Roddy more. And instead of, you know, having Orange do stuff and Bandido do stuff, etc. And I would have had Garcia, and I would have Jake Hager up the rampway protecting Jericho as he does commentary. Now, before the match starts, this tag team match, I would show highlights of last week. I would show highlights of Orange Cassidy and Bandido getting it, helping out. Because when Cole starts going up there, the rampway, and he's getting blocked by Hager and Garcia, and Jericho's glowing, like, what are you going to do? You're going to try to go through an undefeated MMA fire like they always, you know, preach about Jake Hager and and my young gun, Dan Garcia. What are you going to do, you little punk? And then, boom, out comes Orange Cassidy, Bandido, two chair shots to the back. And now Jericho's like, oh shit, I'm by myself. There's no one to help me. And then, you know, Cole, like maybe Cole runs up there. Jericho tries to run away. Cole jumps on his back, boom, starts throwing rights, boom, boom, boom. You know what I mean? And then I think that would have been cool. At least you can have Orange Cassidy and Bandido get involved and play off what happened last week, but they're not just going to take away from Roddy's moment too as well, you know, and Cole's. That's the, should be the focus, right? Mainly Cole.
Yep.
But since Roddy debuted, you want to give him some time in there and they showcase him. And I thought being an 8-man tag, he didn't get the opportunity. Though he did his moments, it would have been better if you just showcased him more, I thought.
All right, so the last segment that I wanted to talk about, and I don't really like this angle, but I thought, you know, they are focusing on it, and it is the Outcasts versus the Originals, and they had a match with Saraya and Willow Nightingale that predictably, you know, Saraya was going to win. Willow still, the fans still dig her, even though all she does is lose on Dynamite. I know ROH is a little bit different, but, you know, not even near the amount of people watch that ROH show that watched this AEW show. So Saraya wins, and, you know, they're about to do the heel thing where they're going to beat her up. And all of a sudden, Sheeta comes out. And poor Sheeta. She was running on those like wooden flip flops. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this woman should just throw those flip flops off and just sprinted to the stage. Yeah. It didn't look fun running in those things. So Sheeta comes in and it looks like she's going to team up with the Outcast to beat up Willow some more. But right then and there, Britt and Jamie show up and Sheeta turns on the heels. She spray paints Saraya in the eyes. And now we have our 3-on-3 for whatever they're going to do. But actually, they need a fourth, right? So maybe Willow is their fourth, the baby faces?
Well, who is the...
So we got...
Saraya, Tony, and...
Yeah, so it is three. Yeah, it is 3-on-3.
So they got the even sides now. Well, Saraya versus Willow was not a good match. She's very, still very rusty, in my opinion. Just didn't gel together. But the angle, it was okay. You know, it was fine. I was kind of confused at first, but then, you know, they swerved it. And I hate when Tony Schiavone says swerve. They swerved us. Like, God, I hate that. You know, like, anyways, but it was fine, I guess. You know, got to where it makes sense. I mean, this logically makes sense because the way Saraya and Tony treated Sheeta. But the thing is, I just forgot about Sheeta.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they bring these people back, and it's like, oh, yeah, you know? Yeah,
that's the problem, though, right? Yeah. Like, you know, if Sheeta's going to be involved in this big thing, like, and then all of a sudden she's off TV for 4 weeks, then you just move on because TV moves on so fast. And that's what I'm saying, like, this Hangman thing, like, I just wish he would be on television because, you know, he'll get that surprise pop, but I want him to be like the big badass babyface coming back to take heads. Like, that's what I want because, you know, but it that's just not how they portray him, and at least yet. With him not being there, he just looks like not a badass, right? Like...
And I feel kind of like it's going to play into Heyman's returns, going to play into more of him and Kenny Omega's drama, because Kenny Omega has not once talked about Hangman, showed any concern about him. Remember the attack happened with Don and Hangman, it was Don he was worried about, not Hangman.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I hope it's when Hangman returns, it's going to be about getting revenge on Bryan Danielson, not the whole CW drama with Kenny Omega, but with Sheeta, and like I said, how we forgot about her. But what about like Riho that was involved in the Outcast stuff early on, and Sky Blue was part of that.
Well, if they do figure out how to make it four, I think Riho's an easy fourth that you could toss in there.
Who would be the fourth? Monet?
Yeah, I mean, it would be somebody probably who we haven't seen yet.
Or maybe, or I don't know. Someone, but she'll only WWE for like a few months, so I guess I don't know. But yeah, the angle was okay, but the match was. We forgot to talk about with Adam Cole and Jericho stuff when we came back from the commercial break. You have these security guards that are taller than Adam Cole holding them back, and Jericho screaming like, "Get him out of here! He's crazy!" And then here comes. I don't know how you're making a cool baby face when your girlfriend comes and protects, you know, smacks Jericho. Jericho takes a bump and acts all like whiny face, like or boo boo face about it. I'm just like, what? Like you're just like mastermind heel that orchestrated this, you know, violent attack of, you know, handcuffing Adam Cole so he can watch while he had assistance from these the heel women faction to beat down his girlfriend, and now you're getting slapped by Britt Baker and you're just acting like a baby. Like, I don't get that. Just like a really big tone shift for me.
Well, I think the idea is she's the big baby face. It's like she's the one who got beat up, right?
Oh my God. That's not a good look for Adam Cole. She's the one that's.
Well, but she can't fight Jericho in a match, so Adam Cole's the one who's going to have to do the bidding. But she's the one who got beat up because of his mastermind, and so she was like, I'm the person who's going to get in his face and do something about it because, mm-hmm. you know, all these guys are taking away Adam, so he can't do it. And Jericho's, we're not going to let Jericho get out of this. So then she slapped him. I don't know if I would have bumped for it the way that he did bump. Like, I think he should have, like, done, like, a giant, like, how dare you kind of thing rather than, like, fall on the ground and cry about it. But, like, I didn't like his reaction there. But I didn't mind Britt doing that because... it's just not what we generally see with this kind of thing. And also, if they were going to do this, and they did it, obviously, I would have just made it bigger. Like, I would have made it, like, 3 weeks in a row, they can't get to this dude. And finally, she's like, you know I'm not supposed to do anything with males. It's not in my contract. I know we can get in trouble if we mix it up like this, and then but I had to, and then boom, and maybe she gets suspended for like hitting Jericho or something, just to make it feel big. It just came off as like just another part of the angle.
What if like a scenario I had out there without Bandido and Orange Cassidy coming and hitting Hager and Dan Garcia with chairs to allow Cole to get to Jericho? Maybe Cole, you know, is having a hard time getting through, and Jericho's gloating, and then behind, here comes Britt from behind, and she's scratching his eyes, she's digging her fingers in, he's like, oh my god, and then all of a sudden, the outcast girls show up, and now they're beating on her, here comes Jamie Hayter, now it's just freaking chaos all over with Cole, and Strong, and Jericho appreciators, and Jericho, and the women, and all, you know, they had this really chaotic scene when everyone's flying through, you got security, got referees, you got Tony Khan out there trying to figure out what to do, maybe just do like some kind of chaotic scene to open up the show like that, you know, like, mm-hmm. holy cow, what's going on here? And then finally there's parameter set, like, hey, there can't be no physical altercation between Britt and Jericho, no man versus woman violence, something like that. I don't know. We can do something there, but whatever, they could have done something better because it was very lackluster in my opinion.
All right, so we have Double or Nothing. We still only have one match announced for Double or Nothing. It is the title match that is announced. So,
I almost said, which match is that?
Yeah, just the title match. That's it.
I'm guessing Christian versus Wardlow, which at least that's a good match for Wardlow.
I like that a lot. I like it way better than Luchasaurus.
Oh, yeah. I think we all celebrated, you know, like the whole, you know, thank God, because... but did you see Wardlow's reaction this show?
Oh, when Christian said it was him?
No. Just the match.
Yeah. He's not. They don't care.
Like the Powerball Symphony, they do not care at all. Because they've seen this before, him doing this to these unknown guys, right?
And they know that it didn't really lead up to anything.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. If he was maybe doing it to like some mid-level heels, they might be a little more into it, but. But at least Wardlow Christian at the pay-per-view, which I hope that's the match, will be a good match for Wardlow.
Christian's whole job is to get this guy back over. It's a big job, but that would be his whole job.
And I'm glad that Wardlow was doing like he made sure to mention open challenge because last time we saw Christian was he lost to Jungle Boy, so it makes sense there. But yeah, you think Christian wins?
Oh God!
With the help of Luchasaurus.
I mean, he's I think it would be a pretty good story, but I don't know how many more L's Wardlow can take here.
Yeah, I don't. He just got screwed out of the title after he won it after the pay per view, and then you do it again, and I don't think it's good to hot potato that belt as much as they have been lately. So.
All right, so no show for you this weekend on Fight Game Media Network. Instead, we got Scott E. Wrestling. Scott mostly does shows for our Patreon, but he also does live streams on our YouTube channel. But he has two shows this week, so we're going to throw one of them on the free feed. So we give John a week off because he's got a pretty busy weekend. So if you're a Joshi fan, you'll be able to hear Scott E. on in John's spot on Sunday. For me, I'm going to talk to Ian Douglas, who is the author, or technically the co-writer, of the Steve Kern book. Dave and I interviewed Steve Kern last week about the book. The book is really good. Mm-hmm. It is, you know, it's 70s and 80s, you know, a time that is much different than today. So I know that some people have some issues with some of the things that, you know, Steve did as far as ribs were concerned, because they sound pretty cruel. And it's just, you know, we're looking at things through the 2023 eyes. So some of that stuff that they did back then, obviously, is just bad.
Yeah.
But I want to talk to Ian, because Ian's kind of become the it guy when it comes to writing these books about these, you know, this time in wrestling that is going to be forgotten unless we have more Ians. And I'm excited to talk to him, because he's written now the Kern book, the one on B. Brian Blair, which I read. I would say I got halfway through the Brian Blair book. I got through, I don't know, probably not even half, but I read some of the Bugsy McGraw book. I didn't read the Hornswoggle book that he wrote, or the I think he did one on. Did he do one on Dan Severn, maybe?
I don't know. I want to get the Steve Kern one, though.
Yeah, you'll love it. You'll really like it.
I still got to finish my Buddy Rogers. I kind of took a break from it, but it's really good. I just got to pick it back up.
So I'll talk to Ian tomorrow. We'll put that up in the podcast feed for Saturday morning. If you want to watch the conversation on YouTube, we will live stream it on our YouTube channel at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Friday. But I'm also recording with Dave on Friday. I think we're going to go around 1. So if you are a video subscriber to F4W's video channel, that should be the time that we do it, going over all of the stuff that is in the latest issue of The Observer. And I've really talked to Dave about stuff, because last week we talked to Steve. So it's good time for me to chat with Dave about the news and business and such, because I save my questions. I don't even bother him anymore. I don't like shoot him a thing in Twitter, or, you know, send him an email, because I'm just like, I'm just going to write it down, because I'll just ask him on air and I'll get his, you know, I'll get his real answer there. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So that's it from here. We'll be back next week. And I don't think we have anything else to plug. So for John, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.